Just one little bit. I'm Carl V. Nelson, and I'm here with Mr. McKinney in his home on December the 3rd. I am going to interview Mr. McKinney. He's an old time printer and active in community affairs in Bisbee here, but mostly in the printing business and some in politics. It is understood that this interview may be used by the Bisbee Council on the Arts and Humanities for whatever use they may desire, including the release to any person seeking information. You understand that?
Should I go ahead and read?
Yeah, you go ahead now and read. Well, I'll stay first. Mr. McKinney has a prepared statement he wishes to read. And I'll go ahead, Mr. McKinney.
Well, you're going to cut any of this out, you want to change it around. After getting out of my 1916 Bisbee City Directory, I went to work for the Bisbee Oar as new editor, covering local news and writing editorials. I became well known among newspaper men around the state and politicians as the Republican editor of a Democratic newspaper. The Oar was a Democratic paper, as Mrs. A.T. Hoy and her son Theodore were Texas Democrats. She and I only compromised, and I ended up by leasing the job shop. In 1920, the union job printers all over the country demanded a 44-hour week, Saturday afternoon off, with 48 hours pay. The Bisbee Daily Review closed its job shop, and Mrs. Hoy did the same, and I was out of a job. In the next year, I accumulated the material and equipment for my own shop, and in 1921 opened up my shop in the Oddfellows Building, 33 Subway, with a contract with the union for 44 hours, making my shop the number one union shop in the county. I advertised in the Morning Review every Sunday, at first merely ads for my shop, and then I began to editorialize, expressing my views and opinions on the problems of workers and of the small business men, of which I was one, fighting the battle for the little fellow. These editorials brought me many favorable comments. It made me wonder if those who were on my side would support a small weekly. Two attempts to publish weeklies in Bisbee failed, and I studied a long time before I started the Brewery Gulch Gazette, but finally did so, the first issue being dated March 6, 1931. I thought I was on the right track after getting so many pats on the back from readers of my ads, and it turned out that I was right. Many of them said, "You speak our language. you write what you think, and we like your thinking. No one tells you what to write or not to write. You are independent, and it's good that you have given the little fella a voice in the community, and so on, so on. Then came my big break in 1932, election year. And at the time that I, at that time that I started, La Reina Cobre, what the Mexicans call the Copper Queen, La Reina Cobre, taking over the CNA Mining Company from the, they're taking over the CNA Mining Company. In a special election in 1929, the county seat was moved from Tombstone to Bisbee, and the Board of Supervisors contracted the building of the new courthouse. The three members of the supervisors were not on their toes, and their deal with the Phoenix contractor did not include a proviso that only Arizona copper must be used in the brass and bronze fittings, those big front doors and other fittings in the building. There is not a pound of Arizona copper or American copper in the courthouse. All of it coming from Chile. The Gazette tore into our supervisor for not insisting in the contract that Arizona, at least American copper, be used. He was one of three, but if he had brought it up, the others would have gone along with him. Some smart guy incited the local miners to holler their heads off and say that our supervisor, that he was taking the bread out of our mouths by using South American copper. The Gazette pounded away at him. That was election year 1932. And as a result, he was defeated for re-election. This was a big feather in the cap, Brewery Gulch Gazette. It helped build up our subscription list and got us more advertising. A big help. The supervisor from this district was Harley Cox.
I'd like to refer back to one or two things. You started out by saying that you come here in 1916 to start your...
The second directory.
Second directory. Your first one was in 1913, wasn't it?
1913, I got the information.
You got the information.
We finished up January...
In 14.
February 1st, 1914.
Yeah. That directory, can you recall offhand about how many names you had in it?
No, I don't. No, Carl, I haven't any idea. I didn't know there were the names of about 5,200 workers in the mines, Mexicans,
yes,
and others on top and in the mines,
yes,
of the CNA, the Copper Queen, the Shattuck Den. In those three companies, A few years ago, I called up Abe Nolan to find out how many were working. At that time, that was, I suppose, 5 or 6 years yeah. ago, and he said there were 1,760-some working. That he knew every day just how many yes. were working that well, day. But when I got out the directory, there were over 5,200 workers altogether.
On the Pet Company payroll?
Yes.
Yes.
So I don't know how many names there are in the directory,
yes.
but I do know how many people were working for the mines, men.
At that time, there were quite a few grocery stores and independent merchants in this area, were there not? A lot of grocery
yes.
stores, and there were a lot of restaurants and boarding
oh,
houses
yes,
that
yeah.
were main hired help.
Oh, yes.
You know, I'm trying to find out, you know. You could say there was at least 1,000, maybe 2,000 extra employed in the district at that time because of the other activities.
Yeah, oh yes, yes.
And of course, you just have the employees, you don't have the families, but of course the average was say of a fourth of a family, there were around 25,000 people in the area
oh.
at that time.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Think not?
Oh, no. I figured about there were around 17,000, 18,000.
18,000, yeah.
Yeah,
well,
that's all,
yes. Yes. Well, the average wouldn't hold up there then.
No, 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 no. no.
Yeah.
Those rooming houses
yes.
were full
yes.
single men.
Yes.
And there were... at least two restaurants on Prairie
yeah.
Gulch. There were three restaurants in Lowell, and there were grocery stores.
Yes.
Small business, yes, there was
yeah.
a great deal. There were
yeah. Now, you say that there were two previous attempts to start weekly papers in there. Do you have any idea who? What they were?
Snow and Johnson were two printers. They had a shop down about Dabovich Hall. You know where Dabovich
yes.
Hall? Well, right along there on Nackle Road. And I don't know who the other was, but several years before, I was told that somebody had started a weekly.
A weekly paper in Lowell.
Well,
it was called the Lowell Journal.
Oh, it was?
Yes, because I worked on it.
Oh, well, I'll be darned.
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. I think, you see, this, it was another one of these Hovel A. Smith projects.
A what?
A Hovel A. Smith project. He was the backer.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah, he backed the paper. And one of my duties was the, of course, being down in Lowell, they had to furnish transportation for their office force, the news gatherers, you know.
Yeah.
So they had a saddle horse. And I used to have to go down to Hovel A. Smith's barn in Bakerville and get that horse every morning.
And, oh, wow.
They had some pretty good newspaper men on the staff. The first one, first man, a fellow by the name of Trenham, he'd worked on the Chicago Tribune.
Well.
And then he got into other things, and then a man by the name of Allen took over as the editor of the paper. I don't remember his name, but part of his family still reside in the district here. Allen, he when the paper folded up, he went to Phoenix, and of course, being a good newspaper man, a politician, why, he got to be ghostwriter for old George W.P. Hunt. He
well,
wrote much of George Hunt's speeches.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But it only lasted a few years. They, oh, They tried to branch out. They tried to print a weekly paper for Bisbee here, Bisbee area, and then tried to one up in a weekly paper for Cortland when that was starting.
Well.
And then they put out another weekly paper for a place over in New Mexico. I don't remember the name, but all I remember is the name, Sylvanite, a new mining community over there. So that they put out three newspapers down there in that plant, three weeklies.
Uh-huh.
But, it just didn't take, that's all. They just didn't have the right kind of men to go after the business.
Oh, I see.
So that it failed down there. That was located on that, what they call Junction Avenue, is where they printed the plant. And the plant was up on the side street, the corner of going up Junction Avenue. First place was a saloon, then there was a justice court, and then the newspaper office that's all occupied now there by that White, in that building that Whitehead's Lowell Furniture Store is. All in that area. And I was at, they was operating the paper at the time of the Den Powder Magazine explosion.
Of what?
When the Den Powder Magazine exploded.
Oh.
I had cleaned up in the shop and taken the trash paper out and was in the backyard burning it. It just lit the paper. And the explosion occurred. Mm-hmm. But the explosion was severe enough, I guess between the vibration in the ground and shaking, the concussion, had put my fire out. So I got scared and I ran in the building. And I didn't stop in the building. I looked out the front window and everybody was running down the street, so I run out to see what was wrong. That was the morning of the Den explosions. So that's the time that paper was running down there. Of course, I don't remember too much about the other attempt, but I know that one.
Well, Snow and Johnson there, Wicker, didn't last
very
long.
You know, it took financial backing to start anything like that in this town here, because things were pretty much under control, you know. The review had everything sewed up, and It just was a fight to get business for a newspaper, because the merchants didn't feel inclined to advertise. Now, the old Evening Miner, I always think about old D.W. Simple. He was the only one that made it pay. To get advertising, he'd go to the merchants and say, well, I think you ought to put in a quarter page ad in my paper. Well, I can't afford it, Mr. Simple, just can't afford it. Well, that's up to you, he says. If you know, he says, I'll give you free advertising if you want it. So, but they knew what that meant. He was a pretty sarcastic writer. So,
well, I'll be darned.
By the time he got the newspaper office, the copy was down there for a half of quarter page ad.
Oh, God. Oh.
He got the paper money. Now, referring back to this county seat election, I suppose you remember the issues of it. It was, of course, the bring the county seat from Tombstone over. And do you have any opinions of how the election was conducted?
I don't do.
Well, of course, I have my own opinions, but I don't think I should record them about the election. But the amusing thing was, to me, was that I used to laugh. You remember the Jovanoviches? Jovanoviches that run that store at the Miner's Market?
Yeah.
Lee and Mike? Well, they were real backers for the courthouse to come over here. Well, of course, they didn't realize that the law stated that if there's the county judge and the sheriff had to be in the county seat. That's the law specified that. So when they moved the court, so when the election was over and they declared that Bisbee declared the courthouse, Well, the first thing they did was to move the county judge, the Superior Court judge, and the sheriff and his office force over here. And he moved right next to the Jovanoviches. They didn't like it.
Well,
too much law. But that was the law. And the rest of the court officials didn't move over for maybe a year, year and a half. But that was the first thing that had to be done according to law. The Superior Court judge, we only had one judge in those days,
yeah,
and the sheriff, they both had to function from the county seat.
Well, my recollection about that election roll is a little, I'm not sure about all those things.
Yes, but nobody knew it. I wouldn't have, no, I don't think anybody knew it, you know, excepting the law, that was the law.
Uh-huh.
And of course, I used to kid them then, because they thought, gee, the sheriff right next door to us. They didn't like that. That's how they built that building then right away, you see. It's part of the city hall now, that annex to it. You see, the county built it, and that's why they built it. See, the judge is upstairs, and the sheriff's office was downstairs in the county jail. Part of this county jail was down there. That was the occasion of that building being built. Of course, now it's part of through some deal why the city's acquired it, and it's part of the city property now. Do you suppose that your attack on the supervisors because of the copper, not being Arizona copper, had anything to do when the school board built the Lowell School that they were so quick to specify Arizona copper?
No.
Well, I always wondered why they were, you know, that was about the first thing they demanded when they built that school in Lowell across from the cemetery there, that the roof and everything be Arizona copper in there that was brass.
Well.
So that's about the only public building, I guess, in town that has a copper roof. And that's the, must be the outgrowth of that. Is there anything else you'd like to add? We have a few minutes left on here. Do you want any, of course, in your community affairs, you're active in the formation of a baseball clubs, and do you want to say anything about any of the baseball activities here in the early days?
Well, there were four semi-pro teams here. The Junction Briggs, the Cole, the CNA, and the Copper Queen. Three of them were really CNA.
Yeah.
But the companies brought in ball players from the coast, put them to work in the mines. They were on the payroll anyway, and
yeah,
some
on
of
payroll,
them
yes.
worked. I remember you told me that one of them was your helper.
Yeah, the umpire, one of the umpires.
I'd forgotten. I was,
yeah,
there was a, well, there was a ball player of the same name.
Yes.
The same last name, and I was, he was the one I was thinking of when they subsidized the, there were many local players, but there were also these better players from the coast that they played ball for miners' wages. They didn't do much work.
No.
Yes, we had that. And then about 29, they organized a state league. I know Bisbee had a team, Phoenix. I think Tucson, and El Paso, and Roy Johnson managed the Bisbee team for a year or two. I remember he brought Tuck Stain back from Fairfax High School in Los Angeles. He was 19 years old, I think. And he went up to the big leagues. Roy went to Los Angeles, which had backed our team here, and took Tuck Stain back with him. And Tuck Stain back afterwards went up to the Chicago Cubs, became a major league player, and Roy Johnson became a coach for the Cubs, coached at first base, and then did general coaching there of the infielders and outfielders. But he was a regular coach at first base, and a good one. And as far as I know, he's still working for Wrigley.
Would that be the same team with that fellow Jess Flores? Was that be the same teams that Jess Flores pitched for? Jess Flores, you know, he went up to major leagues too. Pitcher, Jess Flores. He was a pitcher for our team here.
Flores,
F-L-O-R-E-S.
Oh, Jess Flores. Oh, yes, Jess Flores. Yes.
He pitched for
Well, I'm not sure. I thought maybe that was later.
Maybe.
But I'm not sure. Oh, yes, Jess Flores. Yes, I remember. He was a fine pitcher. And he was in baseball a few years, just a few years ago, as a coach or a scout.
Yeah.
I remember seeing him up at Tucson when they played there. He was, yes, Jess Flores, he was, I don't know whether that was the same league or not that he was. I think it was later, about maybe 37 or 39,
maybe,
or 41. I'm not sure about that, just what year he was, but he went up to the major leagues. He was a good pitcher, just for us.
I think I'm getting close to the end here, so well, thank you, Mr. McKinney, for
Well, do you think you've got about everything you wanted?
I got just about everything you said, and we may think of something else we might want later on. This committee from the Arts and Humanities, they might ask you for more later on.
All right.
If you'll think about it.
I may come up with something else.
Yeah.
And if I do, I'll let you know.
Okay, if you will, please.
Yes, I sure I sure will.
Yeah. And we thank you for your remarks, and I'm sure that this Arts and Humanities group will appreciate everything
you
said.
Well, some of it's a little disconnected, but you can figure out.
Well, it's all disconnected because we're not professional interviewers. That's where the whole trouble is. And we don't, I think, prepare enough ahead of time. I don't think we prepare enough ahead of time for it. So that's what makes it disconnected, you see.
Yeah.
So, well, that's about it.